all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm, and you can reach it at 800-693-4800. Our guest today, we're really happy to have on the program, is John McDougall. John is a chaplain and a captain with the U.S. Army. John, say hello to the Veterans Radio listening audience.
Hey, Jim, great to be with you and great to talk to veterans today.
Well, Chaplain, it's going to be a very interesting discussion. You wrote and have had published a book called Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger. Now, if that title isn't provocative enough to get you to pick up the book, let me tell you, listeners, this is a very good read, easy read. It blends both your experiences in the military with some solid theology. So we look forward to having a discussion on Chaplain John McDougall's book, Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger. John, tell us a little bit about your family's military history. A lot of us who are been in the military were there because of love of country, but also because of some family ties to the military, and you have a little bit of that as well.
Yeah, I have a little bit for sure. Both grandfathers served. Just because of a generation gap, I have a grandfather that served in World War I. And a grandfather that was in the service in the World War II era. And my father was in Vietnam, served as a Navy CB from 65 to 66. And my older brother enlisted when I was pretty young, which is pretty impressionable, a five-year-old when my brother enlisted. And I think, you know, a lot of those men that I got to talk to had great experiences in the service and always spoke highly of their time in uniform, and I certainly think that left a mark on me as a young man.
One of the things that we also like to get communicated to folks, Chaplain, is that everybody goes through some hard times in life. It's what you do with them and how you came out of it. Your father had some trouble with the bottle, and that certainly had some impact on the family, but it has a pretty positive ending to it as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And I think for our Vietnam vet listeners, this will ring true.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, my dad had a rough upbringing even before he deployed. Just tough home life, you know, to be honest. And he didn't do well at school. He got kicked off the football team for fighting. Just a kind of a troubled beginning. And then he gets a girl pregnant, gets married, and enlists in the Navy. Kind of all in short succession. So he really goes to Vietnam already with a drinking problem, and it doesn't help him anymore over there. He told stories about, getting arrested, and he would talk about the captain's mass and the drunken disorderly conduct and assault of a Vietnamese national, and he would still recite his punishments. But my dad came home, that relationship with his first wife didn't last. And he found faith. I mean, he found his way into a church, and found faith in Jesus, and also found AA. And those two things, I think, saved his life, and certainly allowed me to be here. He met my mom in the church, and my dad was dry 40 years before he passed away last year. So.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that with our listeners. Again, I think all of us sometimes think the other guy has an easy, flat path, and many of us have to walk up a pretty rocky road. It's good to know that it can level off, so thanks for that those words of wisdom. In your own case, you decided to go into the Army and went through West Point. Tell us how you made that decision and sort of your early career in the Army.
Yeah, it's funny even looking back now how that happened. Certainly, like I said, my father and my brother talked well of their experiences, but they were both enlisted, and they both gave me the advice, John, if you can do it, go officer, don't put up with some of the stuff that I had to do. And I was a high school freshman when I asked my dad, how do I become an officer? And he talked about ROTC, he talked about OCS, and then he talked about this thing called West Point. And for a boy growing up in Seattle, Washington, that was about as far away as I could imagine, just had no knowledge about it. But it's something caught my interest there at 14, I worked hard. I was a soccer player in high school, worked hard in school, and that was kind of my ambition. So went there upon graduation, commissioned in the infantry. I had a brother, my older brother said, whatever you do, don't let him talk you into the infantry. You know, find something a little easier. But I was stubborn and I wanted to be challenged. And so I enlisted, or I commissioned in the infantry, went to Ranger School, went to Airborne School, and then I got stationed with the 173rd Airborne Brigade in Vicenza, Italy.
And along the way, 2001, 9/11 happened, the towers fell. This was right after you had gotten out of West Point, I believe.
That's right, yeah. I graduated in 2000, and I was in Germany with the 173rd training when September 11th happened, kind of a real centralizing moment when, many of your listeners can relate. You wonder, why are we training? You know, why are we going through all this, you know? And then the towers fall and you realize, oh, this is why we're doing it, because every now and again our nation's going to call on that promise that we made when we rose our right hand, and that certainly happened for us.
So after 9/11, you found yourself in a unit and ultimately finding your way into Iraq. Tell us a little bit about that period of time in your life.
Sure, yeah. I got married in January of 2003. And the sabers were rattling already about the possibility of invading Iraq. And within a little over 2 months, you know, I was in Iraq myself. And if you remember, it's been a little while, but if you remember, we had forces coming in from Kuwait, but we also wanted forces coming in through Turkey, through the north. And when Turkey said that they wouldn't cooperate, they sent, you know, the president sent the 173rd Airborne Brigade to jump into northern Iraq. And I was part of the 1,000 paratroopers that jumped in on March 26, 2003, to see the runway in north of Erbil, and then allow follow-on forces to land. And so that was the start of my introduction to warfare and combat. We were there for 11 months, and it was during that deployment that I heard God's call to be a chaplain, to switch branches from the infantry to the chaplaincy.
And before we get into that part of the adventure of your life, I wanted to talk a little bit. You also have done some overseas tours, both in Kosovo and Afghanistan, if I understand you right.
Yeah. Kosovo was prior to Iraq. That was in 2002. We were there, I think, 3 weeks. Again, parachuted in just as a show of force to all the combatants there in the region and say, hey, we can be here at a moment's notice. And then we did patrolling along the border, the Kosovo, Serbia border, just looking for mostly weapons smuggling and other things. But that was, you know, that was the first time for this young soldier to be issued live ammunition and, be told, hey, you might need this. And then little did I know, you know, less than a year later, we'd be in Iraq.
And what year did you end up in Afghanistan?
So that's been more recently since becoming a chaplain. Now I've served with the Second Ranger Battalion here at Fort Lewis, Washington, and deployed in 2012, 2013, 2014, and 2015, four deployments with the Rangers.
You said, Chaplain, that while you were in Iraq for those 11 months, you heard God's call to switch from the Rangers to the Chaplain Corps. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, when I was dating my wife, she used to ask me, you know, are you sure God doesn't want you to be a pastor? And she just thought I had the attributes that would make a good pastor, good with people and a good public speaker and knew the Bible. And I said, honey, you know, God wants me to be a soldier. He's given me so much success in everything I've done. And we like I said, deployed to Iraq in March, and this is now November. I'm on the phone with my wife and we just learned that we're going to be there a lot longer. And she cries and I try to console her with some words of scripture And she says through her tears, "Are you sure God doesn't want you to be a pastor?" Well, I finished that phone call and I went to bed, and the next morning I couldn't get her question out of my head. It just echoed and echoed in my mind. And I was by myself. I was shaving in front of a mirror there in Kirkuk, Iraq, and I heard that question. I said, "No, I'm not supposed to be a pastor. I'm supposed to be a soldier." And I heard God's quiet voice say, "A chaplain is a soldier and a pastor." And I just couldn't argue with his logic. It took me a little while to agree with him, but I would say about a week later, I said, "Okay, Lord, you win. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do."
So when you called up your wife and said, "Honey, you're right," did she have enough poise as to not say, "I told you so"?
It was pretty close to "I told you so." It ended up being over emails. I didn't get another phone call for a while, but it was over an email. I said, "Honey, I think God's calling me to be a chaplain." And I think her words were something to the effect of, "It's about time that you recognize what I've seen for years." And so she was exactly right, of course. It wasn't quite an "I told you so," but it was pretty close.
You could read between the lines.
Sure.
So then there's a whole journey associated with going through divinity school and picking up the requisite training and degrees. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we returned from Iraq in 2004, and I told my battalion commander, "You know, sir, this is what I feel God calling me to do," and he was enthusiastic about it. But we had orders to go to Afghanistan again, and in this case, the commander left me at home and said, "You're going to look after our families." So that extended me a little bit more on active duty. I left active duty in 2006. I went to seminary in Portland, Oregon. Great experience. Also got to work with the University of Portland Army ROTC just to keep one foot in the service while I was going through seminary. God opened up a door for me in 2010. I went to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and served in the 82nd Airborne Division, and had wonderful commanders there. And then once again, God opened up a door, and I came to serve with the 75th Ranger Regiment here at Fort Lewis, Washington.
And so, did you go back on active duty then in 2010? Is that the sequence?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, came back on active duty. Been the chaplain now for about 5.5 years.
With your Ranger experience and your combat deployments, how has that shaped your approach to being a chaplain?
Oh, wow. I certainly think I'm lucky in that I think I can relate to what the guys are going through in maybe a way that some chaplains might struggle. So I certainly think sometimes guys don't need the Bible open to them. Sometimes maybe they don't even need a word of prayer. Sometimes they just need someone to listen. So I try to be sensitive in those moments. You know, when there's an opportunity to talk about faith, sure, I'm happy to do that. But sometimes the window is just to put an arm around somebody and listen to their stories. And I just know that some of those young men don't have anyone. They don't feel like they can talk to their peers. They can't talk to their squad leaders. Maybe they don't have close relationships with their family, and they just need someone that's going to listen without judgment. I try to do that for them.
Listeners, we're talking to Captain John McDougall. He's a chaplain with the U.S. Army Rangers and author of a book called Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger. John, when did the idea come to you to write this book?
Oh, boy. Short answer is it was April 2nd, 2013. There's a friend of mine who was working on a devotional. He called it Rangers of the Bible, and he wrote a number of Bible characters that either exemplified or failed to exemplify a ranger virtues. And we had worked on it for a while. He had parceled out some of the portions of the book to other chaplains to work on. I had written 4 articles for him. He was nearly finished with the compilation, and I wrote him. I said, "Dana, you've got 2 articles on King David, and you have 2 articles on the Apostle Paul, but we only have 1 on Jesus. This just isn't going to work." And I said, "Give me some time. I'll work on some articles for Jesus." And I was in a training mission in Yakima, Washington, Eastern Washington, and I'm driving back over the Cascade Mountains, thinking about what I'm going to write for Dana. And as I'm thinking about it, I think God just, he just poured a number of ideas into my head all at once. So many that I nearly pulled over as I'm driving across the pass. I nearly pulled over to write them down. And I soon realized not only could I do these devotionals for Dana, but I could do more than that. And so I was determined. I got home that night. I sketched out a quick outline for a book and was determined to get this story into print. And I took that outline with me on an upcoming deployment. We were in Afghanistan for about 3.5 months. And during that deployment, I had basically the start of the book done.
So what you've done in this book is intersperse your military experience, the experience of other Army Rangers, some famous, some not, with the life of Jesus and biblical stories to sort of make the comparison that Jesus was a warrior. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. If you don't mind, I'll just start with kind of the need. I just, it's my time in the 82nd, my time with the Rangers. I just realized that a lot of men, working primarily with men, that they've rejected Christianity, I believe, in part because the portrayal of Jesus is so soft and effeminate. Nothing that these soldiers, these hardened warriors, these battle-tested men could relate to. And so we put this Jesus, with a pasty white smile and Pantene fresh hair and petting a white lamb, and who wants to follow that guy? So I really felt this need to start sharing with my guys, hey, there's another side of the story. Yeah, he was gentle when he needed to be, but there's another side too. And I started sharing some of these things just in short sermons that I would do for the guys, maybe out in the field, out in the training area, out at the range. And the guys would come up to me afterwards and say, sir, I've never heard this stuff before. Nobody's ever told us that Jesus was a warrior. No one ever told us that he was a fighter like me. And, so that really kind of presented the need too, that these guys have to hear, as Paul Harvey used to say, right, the rest of the story. So that's kind of how it began.
And was your audience from the beginning just military men and women and veterans, or did you see this having a broader application?
Certainly initially it was my guys, the guys that I deployed with and the guys that I trained with. And within long, it didn't take long to realize that, whether guys were Rangers or not, whether they were even Army or not, they could also relate to this warrior. So veterans, other branches, other services. And then I realized this. I had a number of Christian friends, Christian men, who never served in uniform, but loved my stories, loved hearing about deployments, loved hearing about, time on the range. They just were captivated by this warrior culture that they knew little about. And I soon realized that they too need to know about this warrior Jesus. They may not know the military life, but they also want to follow a soldier, a champion, and so they need to hear about him too.
When you go through the book and in each chapter sort of take on a different attribute that you then can relate both to Rangers and to Jesus, pick one of those attributes and give our listeners an example of what you're trying to do here.
Wow. One of my favorites is really chapter 2 talks about the incarnation. If you're not familiar with that word, the incarnation is the idea that Jesus became flesh, that he became a human and was God and then lived as one of us. And I call that the first parachute assault, that he jumped from heaven to earth, descended, hit the ground, put his weapon into operation, and then like a good airborne warrior, he went into hiding. He blended into the population. He lived in a rural village of Nazareth. He lived with relatively poor parents in Joseph and Mary. He learned his father's trade just like every other boy in that village did. So he really, even though he had quite an incredible airborne operation to enter Earth, like a good special operations warrior, he went into hiding and waited for the moment to be right, just like you or I would on a mission.
And listeners, I'm going to, before we come to an end of our first segment here, let me read for you the two quotes that lead to Chapter 2 on Incarnation from Chaplain John McDougall's book, Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger. You start this with, "A ranger is a more elite soldier who arrives at the cutting edge of battle by land, sea, or air," from the second stanza of the Ranger Creed. And you follow that up with the biblical statement from John 6:38, "I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me."
He sounds like a soldier, doesn't he, Jim?
He does. He does. Yeah. I think you're, again, you've done this in each of the chapters. After we come back from the break, we'll talk about some of the other attributes that you have drawn the parallels on and done it in a way that I think certainly military veterans, men, women, will view this Jesus not as the wimp that you refer to in the book that we've been spoon-fed, but the warrior. But we'll be right back after these messages. And welcome back to Veterans Radio. We're speaking with John McDougall, a chaplain and captain in the U.S. Army. He's the author of Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger. And one of the things you're doing, Chaplain, is trying to draw parallels between Rangers and those who are following Christ. One of your chapters, Chapter 5, talks about selection. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit about what that parallel is?
Sure. Yeah, in 2012, I had the opportunity to go to the Ranger Assessment and Selection Program at Fort Benning, Georgia, where I was went through a battery of tests, physical, psychological, leadership, to see if I had what it took to be in the Ranger Regiment. It seemed like a pretty strenuous process, and certainly, you know, they weeded out people before we even went to the assessment. They weeded out people based on their packet, and they further weeded out people there. And when I look at Jesus, initially you don't see that same process. You know, he didn't go through Galilee and Jerusalem and all of Israel looking for the elite men. It seemed sort of strange. He just kind of wandered around to the Sea of Galilee and picked up some farmers. Certainly not the recruiting strategy that you or I might use if we were trying to change the world as he was. And yet, you know, he picked those people for the reasons he had, and they were everyday people. They were commoners, if you will. They didn't have anything spectacular about them, but they were hardworking, salt of the earth type people. And the analogy I take is, you know, Jesus is still calling people, and like the Rangers, he's calling us to a rescue mission. He's calling us to something that really matters, not just going to church and spending time in potlucks and Bible studies. That's not what he's calling us to. He's calling us to a rescue mission, just as the Rangers do. But he's calling everyday people. You know, he's calling people that don't have the highest physical scores or the highest intellectual scores. But he's saying, you know what? You're the right guy for my job. Just as Peter was and James and Matthew and Thomas. He said, I have a plan for you, and I know I can use you. And he's still doing that today.
So one of the things that you do in this chapter in particular is sort of draw that line between you have to qualify for the Rangers and the Rangers have to select you, and some of the biblical verse that, quote, "You did not choose me, but I chose you," yeah. John 15:16, and make this sort of throughout this chapter, this idea that you have to be willing to serve, and when you get to that right frame of mind, I suppose, Jesus is recruiting you just as you're being recruited by the Rangers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, to borrow a phrase from our brother Marines, you know, Jesus is still looking for a few good men. And like the Marines, all he's asking is that we would be semper fidelis. He's just asking that we be faithful. He's not asking for superior attributes. He's not hand-picking. He's really looking for a mass of people, but he's looking for a volunteer. He's looking for the willing. And that's what we see in these 12 men that Jesus picked. He found men, he called them, and they said yes. The fishermen, they dropped their nets. The tax collector, they walked away from their lucrative profession, and they said, yes, I'll go. And in many ways, you know, the veterans listening to this program can relate to that. They dropped whatever life they had, whatever family they had at the time, and they said, you know, here am I, send me, I'll do it. And Jesus is still calling people in that same way.
I want to read a sentence or two that you wrote and then have you talk a little bit more about it. You wrote, the biblical Jesus was a wild rescuer who defied social norms to accomplish his mission. As a boy, I was taught about a meek and mild Jesus, but as a man, I know I must put away childish ways behind me and press on toward the goal of knowing Jesus as he truly is. Tell us a little bit more about what you're trying to get across to the reader.
I guess the first thing I want to get across is that we become like the God we worship. And if our concept of Jesus is just this meek and a milquetoast and watered down Jesus, then who do we become like? If we choose to follow him, we become like him. We become spineless and spiritless and lifeless. And that's, you know, unfortunately we see some of that in the church. But if we have an accurate picture of Jesus, then we're full of life. One thing we see in his life is we see someone that people love being around. They love spending time with him. They love hearing his stories. He was the center of life. People flocked to come hear him, and many times even forgetting to pack a lunch. They just dropped what they were doing and came to hear what he had to say. And I think if we recapture that, I want to become like that Jesus. I want to become one that people want to be around. I want to be one that people are drawn to. Not that they're drawn to me, but that they're drawn to the Christ in me, the Jesus in me. And he absolutely, he defied social norms. You know, there's a great quote in Philip Yancey's book, The Jesus I Never Knew. He says, no government has ever executed Captain Kangaroo or Mr. Rogers. You know, no government executes someone for just telling people to be nice. Jesus came and defied social norms, and he poked leaders in the eye, and he said, you know, this isn't the way we're going to do things. This isn't the right thing to do. He overturned tables and made a whip and drove out animals from the temple. He said, this is wrong. And I think we need more of that type of Jesus in our churches, in our world today.
You do write about how there's a spiritual war going on and the enemy's trying to pick us off one at a time. What are the three things you feel we must do to engage in this fight and win against an enemy in a spiritual war?
Yeah, we see this, first of all, it plays out in the temptation of Jesus. If you remember the story, it's in Matthew 4. You know, Jesus was led into the desert to be tempted. He was out there for 40 days without food, which I liken to Ranger School. For any of you who are familiar with the school, hungry, tired, exhausted. Now he's going to be tested. Now he's going to come face to face with his enemy. And the temptations that Satan used on Jesus, he'll use on us. And the first one was this idea that God didn't provide for you. Look how hungry you are. Why don't you turn these stones into bread? And we can have the same temptation. God, you're not providing for me. I need to do my own thing. I need to cheat at work, or I need to be dishonest in my finances, or I need to get ahead somehow, because somehow, God, you're not providing for me. Jesus didn't bite at that temptation. The second temptation was that of worship, Satan said, you know, worship me. And I tell you what, we don't often get tempted to worship Satan, but we do get tempted to kind of put ourselves on that throne that belongs to God. And I'm the big deal, and I'm the one that really matters, and I'm the one you should pay attention to. When Jesus knew all along, no, it's not about me, it's about God, and it's about him getting the worship he needs. And then lastly, there was a temptation about God keeping us safe. Jesus was tempted to climb up on a temple and jump down, and he said, "You know, I'm not gonna play those games. I don't need to test God, and we need to be the same way. We don't need to push God to limits where he has to make a decision to come through for us. We need to trust him for our protection. And then the one thing we see too, which I think is important, Jesus faced the enemy alone, but no ranger would ever face the enemy alone. And we need to face him with a band of brothers around us, with warriors to our left and right who can toss us a magazine if we run low, who can guard our flanks and our rear, like a ranger platoon in a good 360 perimeter. That's what we need to do to fight the good fight.
I want to talk about one more chapter here, which is chapter 9, which is titled Crucifixion, which is certainly not a word any of us like to hear, but the subtitle is more interesting, Giving Your Life Away to Rescue Others.
Mm.
And the parallel you draw between the Ranger Creed and biblical verse in John 15:13, I want to read for the listeners. You write, "Readily will I display the intestinal fortitude required to fight on to the ranger objective and complete the mission," from the sixth stanza of the Ranger Creed. And you butt that up against, "There is no greater love than to lay down one's life for one's friend," from John 15:13. Tell us about the comparison that you're making in this chapter.
Yeah, absolutely. This is probably the climactic chapter, certainly, the climax of Jesus' life. And the more I think about it, the more I realize, you know, we inspire soldiers, Marines, airmen, sailors. You know, we tell them the highest virtue is to give your life away. You know, we hold up each of our services have our Medal of Honor recipients, and we hold these men up and say, look, either they gave their lives or they nearly gave their lives to rescue their brothers. And these men, these women are to be honored in that way. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought that's exactly what Jesus did. He deployed to earth. He spent 33 years conducting his mission, recruiting his recruits and getting ready for the final assault on the objective. And that's what the crucifixion was. You know, we talk about, you know, we say to a platoon of Marines, you know, go take that hill. Well, Jesus took the hill outside of Jerusalem called Golgotha, and he was willing to give his life on that hill to rescue humanity from our captor. We were spiritual POWs trapped by Satan. And he said basically in a POW exchange, you know, I'll trade my life for theirs. You take me, but you set them free. And, I thought, man, this is not a soft, gentle, effeminate Jesus. This is the ultimate warrior. This is a Medal of Honor worthy warrior that we should see him as such, because that's what he is.
It certainly was a reading and a version of the Christ story that I'd never really thought about until I read your book. I never put all the pieces together the way that you presented. And I want our listeners to know that we're talking to Captain John McDougall of the Army Rangers. He's in the Chaplain Corps. He wrote Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger. And I know some folks are going to go, I don't want to read a heavy theology book. This is not a heavy theology book. You didn't intend it to be. I assume your audience was supposed to be regular people who maybe would take a little time to read through this.
Oh, that's exactly right. And, you know, one thing I know as I talk about wanting to be more like Jesus, Jesus was a storyteller, and he didn't spend time in heavy theology lessons either. He told stories, analogies, things people could relate to. And certainly this book is full of military metaphors, both from my life and, as you said earlier, from the lives of previous Rangers and previous soldiers, World War II, a Revolutionary War, and even modern conflicts. This is meant for us to hear the Jesus story in a brand new way.
This, listeners, is a pretty easy read, and I mean that in the best sense of the word. One of the things that you'll be comfortable with and recognize when you read this is at the end of each chapter you put an after action review in. Tell us a little bit about what the thinking was there.
Yeah, well, the thinking was a few things. One is I'm guilty. I've read through books and I get to the end and I haven't really ever thought about the content. I just consumed it and didn't let it digest. So first of all, for the readers that are reading it by themselves, to give them a moment of reflection and go, okay, what did I just read and how does that impact me? How does that change my life? or my view of Christ. And the other one is, you know, maybe there's a couple people, maybe there's a couple men that meet for coffee in the mornings, or maybe they're in a small group, or maybe it's just the local VFW or American Legion. Maybe there's a couple guys that want to read the book together, and maybe they can, you know, tackle a few of these questions and say, you know, what do you think? What struck you about what he said, and what about this question? How do I wrestle with this? So that was kind of the thinking there.
Well, I do think it makes the book more engaging, more approachable. So, and those of us familiar with after action reports, that this feels real comforting to read. So, let me ask you though, Chaplain, when you wrote this, did you expect to get some backlash from people who thought this was inappropriate?
Yeah, actually, I did. You know, and the funny thing is, you kind of get it from both sides. You know, on the one hand, you know, you get people from the religious, you know, I guess I say religious background, you know, church upbringing, and oh, you can't talk about Jesus in this way. You know, just for your listeners, you probably won't have a problem with this. You know, at one point in the introduction, I called Jesus a badass. And, you know, that's not a term we usually use for the Son of God. But it seems very appropriate for those of us who've served in the military. We know what that means. It's someone who's tough, disciplined, and refuses to back down. And that's certainly what he was. And then you got folks on the other side who are going, hey, what are you doing over here? You know, you're a chaplain. Are you allowed to talk about Jesus in this way? Are you allowed to blend these stories? So I think I'm in a good place. Jesus, when he was on earth, he had enemies on both sides too. So I think that's a good spot to be.
How have your fellow chaplains in the Corps taken this book that you've written and sort of the theology that you're promoting?
You know, really enthusiastically for the most part. They're doing the same things. They're trying to communicate the truth of the Bible to their audience. And this is just one way that God gave me to do that same thing. But, you know, there are hundreds of chaplains across the services who are doing the identical thing. How do I translate what I learned in seminary to the sailor, to the Marine, to the airman in hostile places or in the homeland? And this is just one vehicle that God gave to me to do the same thing. So positive response from fellow chaplains.
From your non-Christian chaplains, how has the book been received?
You know, I haven't had any real reaction. You know, I would hope that they would see what I'm doing and really do the same thing as in their faith. How do I bring what I know to a place that my soldiers can relate to? And that's really what Jesus did with his ministry, and as he told parables about sheep and farming and wedding parties, he told his people things they could relate to. We have to do the same thing as ministers.
I do know that there has been some controversy with certain, I'll call them maybe atheist watchdog groups, about there's too much, I guess, Christianity in the military, or that this book in particular, written by a chaplain, violates Army regulation. Was that sort of outside pressure, again, something that you've expected and have been able to weather?
You know, to be honest with you, it's crazy. I didn't expect it. And there were some other chaplain friends of mine and mentors who just prior to the publication date, you know, said, boy, you know, are you ready? Are you ready for kind of the storm that's coming? And I didn't know what they meant. But I have experienced some of that. And, you know, even, I think one of the things I've heard from the atheist group was that, this is a coup for ISIS. You know, that basically I'm viewing our current war as a religious war, as a holy war, and nothing could be further from the truth. You know, I'm calling us to a spiritual battle, certainly, but not with guns and tanks and aircraft. I'm calling us to fight the good fight against our true enemy, which is the devil, and to be engaged in God's army, just as many of us wore the uniform of our nation's army to be engaged in a fight that's really eternal in its scope. I'm not calling for any kind of a fight against human enemy for sure.
There's certainly no call to the crusade here, but certainly some of those watchdog groups have spun it in such a fashion. How have your command structure reacted to all of this?
Well, their primary focus is, am I doing everything within the law? You know, I am allowed as a chaplain to speak openly about my faith. But there's a few times when I have to make sure that I'm wise in how I do that. So certainly much of what I've written is as a private citizen. Even though I have the experiences of an Army chaplain, what I've written really is not an extension of my official duties as a chaplain. But they're just helping me kind of walk that tightrope between, you know, serving as really a minister employed by the government, and then also a pastor of my particular faith group.
Well, I do think that individuals who read this will find it's directed to them as a single person and asking them and showing them maybe ways in which they could increase their activity, increase their faith, and be comfortable with that more active spirit that maybe not fitting the mold that somebody had told them that Jesus was like and that they were supposed to be like. But you can be a badass and have that spiritual faith.
Oh, absolutely right. In fact, I think that's what God is calling us to. And I think that, again, as I said earlier, many of our men have abandoned the church because it lacks that. You know, we enlisted, we rose our right hand, we signed on the dotted line and said, I'm looking for adventure, I'm looking for a challenge, and I'm looking for a purpose that's bigger than myself. And for the most part, we're not finding that in the local church. And so I think that's what this book is kind of intended to recapture, is to say God is calling us to an adventure. He's calling us to sign up for something bigger than ourselves. He's calling us, and really, as you said from chapter 9, the crucifixion, to give our lives away to rescue others. And I think that's something that veterans can certainly relate to.
We've been talking to Captain John McDougall. He's a chaplain in the U.S. Army. He spent time on active duty with the Rangers and Airborne Qualified. He's done tours in Afghanistan, Iraq, Kosovo. He's the real deal. He's had these experiences, and when God called him to action, he went back and got his master's in divinity in 2009 and has since been on active duty as a chaplain. Chaplain, how do folks find the book and maybe track what you're doing?
Yeah, sure. The book is available really anywhere. Books are sold both online and in brick-and-mortar stores. So really any simple search engine, Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger, will help you to find the book. As far as connecting with what I'm doing, I do have a Facebook page titled Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger, and I try to keep both current events and historical events in the eyes of our readers, to continue the conversation. Just this week, we celebrated the 32nd anniversary of the invasion of Grenada, which again, like Jesus, was going into foreign soil to rescue people and bring them home. And then we also marked the passing of Master Sergeant Josh Wheeler, the Delta warrior who gave his life in Iraq to rescue Kurdish prisoners of war. Again, same metaphor that we're sharing with Jesus that we're seeing in Grenada and in Iraq today.
Well, we've enjoyed our conversation. Captain John McDougall, author of Jesus Was an Airborne Ranger. Thank you for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to podcasts and internet radio shows at veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.